Coming up on this episode of the Mario Rosenstock podcast.
So it's called Coprolalia, and basically it's not really about saying curse words. It's about whatever is wrong, which is why the other night at the BAFTAs, I can see why that guy started dropping N-bombs. It's like, what's the worst thing I could do right now? Like, I'm on his side because I'm a fellow traveler on the Tourette's wagon. But like, putting a guy who screams shit right up next to the microphones, was that a wise choice?
So last week I got a text from Larissa Nolan, who you'll know from previous episodes of the show, about a story that she really wanted to talk about, and she really wanted Carl Dieter, another old friend of this show, to join the conversation too. The story was about an incident that happened at the recent BAFTA Awards on the BBC, where an actor with Tourette's syndrome, whose life story inspired the award-winning film I Swear, shouted out the N-word when black actors Michael B. Jordan and Delroy Lindo were on stage to present an award. Naturally, this caused a major outcry, but the reaction was actually quite nuanced, with a couple of very differing viewpoints emerging. It's a very interesting issue. So Larissa, who has OCD, and Carl Dieter, who has Tourette's, joined me in the Go Loud studio to get into the issue. We chat about what it's like to live with Tourette's and OCD, and how both conditions are actually quite similar in many ways. They also give a great explainer about this BAFTA's story and the nuanced outcry it has caused. And they share their own opinions about it. And as expected, they did not hold back.
It's just riven with hypocrisy. You know, either we actually stand up for minorities and people who are vulnerable, or we don't. Like, you can't just pick and choose whenever it comes up against something that you think, oh, that's more important. You can't have victimhood priorities. He's dealing with this every single day of his life.
Correct.
This was just one instant, a small amount of time.
But black folks would argue they're black every day of their lives, and that comes with various other downsides. But I would say that the people who live with those downsides are certainly not the people on the stage who choose to be offended, or the likes of Jamie Foxx, who is a, you know, multi-millionaire.
But I remember once getting it with a boyfriend that I really, really loved. I remember thinking, geez, I could get that massive vase and just crack it over his head. And I could see like his skull everywhere and all this kind of stuff. So it's actually horrendous imprisonment in your brain. It's really, really bad.
You are a sick boy, Mario. You know, the way you just come up with that boom, boom, boom. There's something wrong with you. I like it, but like...
Yeah, we're fine. It's Mario who's got something wrong with him.
All that and more coming right up. But first... Have you noticed something recently? If you work remotely and you haven't been in a few weeks, or maybe you haven't seen somebody in a few months, because that's the way the kind of tag team of the workplace can often work. You haven't seen someone for a few months, and suddenly when you do see them, jeepers, they're looking awfully well. They've changed. They've shed some timber. They've lost, let's say, loads of weight. And loads of people seem to have lost loads of weight all of a sudden. I wonder what it's all down to.
Ah, Jerry.
Well, Alan, how's it going? How's the
present? Jesus, Jerry, you're looking well.
Oh, thanks, yeah.
Very well.
Yeah.
Very, very well, Jerry. You're looking, I don't know, svelte. Lost a bit of timber.
Oh, that'd be the biscuits.
Biscuits?
Gave up the biscuits.
Yeah, yeah, they're a killer, yeah. Aren't they?
They are a killer, absolutely a killer. I gave them up and it's fallen off me since
yeah,
then.
Yeah. Didn't you try that before?
Don't worry, Jerry.
Giving up the biscuits. Last year, wasn't it?
Oh, that they were different biscuits.
Different biscuits,
yeah. They were sort of bad biscuits. These biscuits worked, though. I mean, anybody gets them up in.
All right, Jerry.
Anyway, what about yourself? Jesus, there's only half of you there left in front of me, eh?
Really?
You're half the size you were. You know, you must have lost about 3 stone, have you, in the last few months?
That'd be Lent.
Lent?
Lent.
Lent.
Lent, yeah, Lent. You know Lent.
Lent's
yeah,
only
yeah.
been on 2 weeks, though, hasn't it?
Yeah, this is extreme Lent, though. Yeah.
Extreme Lent.
Yeah,
Jesus,
that's what they call it.
Play to you,
yeah.
Alan.
Yeah, don't know. It's a punitive.
Well, you're as slim as a whippet.
Oh, thanks.
How are you, lads?
Oh, Sheila. Jesus, Sheila, you look amazing. What have you been up to?
Oh, that?
Huh?
Paddle. Ooh. Paddle.
Paddle.
Oh,
paddle. Yep, yeah, paddle. I've heard paddle is great for the losing the old.
How much paddle are you playing, Sheila?
Three times a day.
Ah, geez, no wonder you're looking so good.
I thought you did loads of marathons, though, Sheila, didn't you?
Oh, they never worked, but the paddle.
Right.
That works.
Paddle.
Falling off me.
Come here, what are the rules of the paddle?
Jesus, Marcus, how are you?
How are you, Marcus? Sheila? Yeah, grand.
What happened to you? You've disappeared.
Yeah.
Turn sideways, you wouldn't see you.
A bit of Tai Chi.
Tai Chi?
Yeah, lost about 5 stone in a month. Revolutionary. Jesus, you have some determination on you, Marcus.
Yeah, it's been a long journey, but yeah, I suppose you don't see many fat people in China.
Come here, what about all you? You all look incredible too.
I mean, paddle,
what?
Yeah.
Paddle, yeah. You gave up the business.
I think I'll extreme Lent. How are you, lads?
Brian. How are you, Brian? Jesus, Brian, you look amazing.
Have you lost weight?
Yeah, lost about 2.5 stone there.
Tennis, yeah?
No.
Oh, gave up the bickies, did you?
No, I'm on Ozempic.
What? What's that?
What do you call it?
I've never heard of it.
What do you call it again?
Come on, lads. You don't think it's a coincidence we've all lost a ton of weight in the last 3 months, do you? Cut down on the bickies. Yeah, really?
No, I'm on it as well.
Me too. I can't keep up this Lent crack any longer.
I've never been to a Tai Chi class.
Yeah, me too. I wouldn't know a paddle if it hit me in the arse.
Look, lads, it's time we squared up with each other, okay? Let's just own this thing, right? When you love pizza pies, but you're now half the size, that's Ozempic.
Yes, Ozempic.
If your diet's not great, but now you're a size 8, that's Ozempic.
That's Ozempic.
Alarm bells ring, ding-a-ling-a-ling, ding-a-ling-a-ling. I can't resist mozzarella.
Mozzarella.
Pharmacy, jibby-jibby-jab, jibby-jibby-jab. Suddenly, skinny fella.
Skinny fella.
When you're suddenly trim with no trips to the gym, that's Ozempic.
That's Ozempic.
So if you're trim and you're fit, don't be ashamed to admit it's Ozempic.
Ozempic.
It's Ozempic. Maybe.
And brand new comedy every week on the Mario Rosenstock podcast. And if you like our comedy bits, just scroll back over the channel and jump into a few other episodes that you might have missed. There's always a comedy sketch, just a couple of minutes into every episode. So check them out and hopefully have a chuckle. But now we're going to get stuck into the news story I was talking about the fallout from an incident at the recent BAFTA Awards with Carl Dieter and Larissa Nolan. It's an interesting one. Enjoy.
So, Larissa, you texted me during the week and you texted me about the story about John Davidson at the BAFTAs.
Yes, indeed.
And you were exercised about it.
I kind of was, yeah.
And we'll get on to that. And you said, what about me and Carl Dieter? Hi, Carl.
Hello.
Coming into the studio and we have a little chat about it. And I thought it was a great idea. And so here we are. And before we talk about, before we refresh the audience as to what happened with John Davidson at the BAFTAs, it turns out that you both have conditions as well. I mean, it's well known to many people that Carl, you have Tourette's.
Yeah.
And Larissa as well, you have OCD.
Yes.
Okay, so first of all, tell me, how does your OCD manifest itself? Where are you on this spectrum?
I think the first thing that comes to my mind is that for years I was afraid to say I have OCD, which is the most OCD thing to say, which for reasons which I'll explain now, because I was afraid that if I said that I'd OCD, then I would do something OCD. So it, like, literally I was thinking, oh, I better not ever speak about that because then this might trigger my OCD. So that just shows you just what a kind of a fear this thing has over your mind. I did realize after 10 years of therapy, which I got for OCD, that actually letting go of that fear removes the power of this thing, and that is actually the way to get over it. So I don't mind talking about it now. I don't want to become one of these people who are like all over Ireland talking about I have this condition and that condition. But one of the reasons I like talking about it is not so much for other people, but for myself, because it means that I continue to conquer the fear of it that had such control of my life for a long time. But basically what it is OCD is on a spectrum where, along with Tourette's, which is probably, it's at varying ends of spectrums. But in my case, it was intrusive thoughts. So some people have, the one that most people know is the one where they, you know, David Beckham lines up cans, or he has to hit the, you know, knock twice in his bedroom door or wash. Yeah, exactly. The hand washing. That's what people tend to know it as. But actually, I would say it seems to me the more tormenting one is the one that I had, which is called pure OCD, which is, it's really characterized by intrusive thoughts. Mine, it depends on the person. It's usually what is most abhorrent to you. So say, for example, if you were a religious person, your most abhorrent thought could be something about blasphemy. If you're a woman, one of the really bad ones actually is women who have babies and they're worried about harming the child because they love the child, they love the baby. So they think of the most abhorrent thing they can think of. So when you're a kind of a creative person or imaginative person, your brain can go to all kinds of lengths, imagining all kinds of things. I could say them now, actually, the kind of things you imagine. But in fact, it still kind of hurts me to think that I even had the power to think of those things.
Microwave your baby or something?
Yes, exactly. Well, I was literally thinking microwave my baby. So this is why me and Carl understand each other.
Yeah.
You know, and like, say, for example, when...
Carl is telepathic as well.
Amongst other things.
He's a Tourette's telepath. He can actually read what bad thing you have in your mind.
I can actually make you curse for me.
But I'd say you can kind of understand it, Carl, because you can imagine where my brain was going.
Well, Tourette's and OCD are kind of hand in hand. So I wouldn't say have what you've got, but I already know like the kind of thoughts you're talking about.
Yeah, so things like, you know, if you lived up like the fourth or fifth floor, thinking of throwing your baby off the, you know, the balcony, just really horrendous things, and then your mind starts thinking, imagine what happened when they hit the ground. Like, you go into quite levels of detail. I used to go into things like imagining the newspaper articles, but what I thankfully didn't get it about my son, which is great, because at that point I'd had loads.
You were
of
writing your own newspaper headline.
I was
in the mirror, yeah. The baby at the ground.
Yeah, but I actually didn't get it about my son. Thank God. I always feel really sorry for women who get it with their children. That must be the worst thing ever. But I remember once getting it with a boyfriend that I really, really loved, and yet, and I mean, this is actually going to sound funny, but it's terrible for you at the time. Like, I remember thinking, "Jesus, I could get that massive vase and just crack it over his head," and I could see like his skull everywhere and all this kind of stuff. So then you start thinking, oh well, if you couldn't, you know, dinner in the kitchen, and you're like, I maybe, what happens if I just turn around and knife somebody with this knife?
Yeah.
The repercussions of that. Yeah. Or even another one is driving in your car and you're driving along the road and you think, what if I swerve and just hit that jogger? But it's actually horrendous imprisonment in your brain. It's really, really bad.
It captures you a bit, does it?
Well, I essentially had what would be called a nervous breakdown over it. I think they call it an emotional breakdown. Essentially, anything that stops you being able to eat or sleep or work or anything. I was very young, but you know, like, I mean, these things kind of tend to happen, I think, in your early 20s. But I just wasn't able to handle it. So anyway, a long time of therapy. Good news about it is, and I always tell people this, it is manageable. You can find ways to control those thoughts. They're literally going down the wrong neural pathways. This is a neurodevelopmental condition. It's not a psychological as much as it is neurological, or to do with the nervous system. So there are ways that you can train your brain to get hold of it. The major one is knowing that your thoughts are not you. What you think is not you. You can think anything. I can think of eating an ice cream now, but I'm not eating an ice cream. So your thoughts are not you.
Usually interesting. All right, let's go. Carl, you have Tourette's. Tell everybody, and let's go back to the beginning. What is Tourette's? What is your Tourette's? And what are the different symptoms of Tourette's and manifestations?
Tourette's has a lot of different symptoms. I got diagnosed almost by accident. I was about 23 years old at the time, and they brought out this new drug in America for quitting smoking cigarettes. And I went along to get it to the doctor, and he said, you're making a lot of faces. He says, are you in any pain? And I said, oh no, I started doing that when I was like 4 or 5, you know. He's like, oh, that's interesting. And he started asking me this other questions. I was like, is that like for this drug that helps you stop smoking? Because it was a super mild antidepressant that it didn't actually make you stop smoking, but one of the byproducts of it was like 30% of the people who took it who were smokers stopped. And that's actually how all the Tourette's or style medicines work. They're not for whatever it is. Anyway, so he said to me, I'd like to ask you about 25 questions. Would you mind? Oh, yeah, sure. You know, once I get the thing, then that's fine. I was a heavy smoker, so I really want to stop. So we did it, and he said, I want to let you know something. He said, the question I asked you, he said, I specialize in this thing called Gilles de Tourette's. And I was like, good for you. Like, what's that got to do with anything? He said, you have a thing called Tourette's syndrome, is what it's commonly known as. He said, that's why you make these faces. That's why you do these sounds. That's why you do blah. And then he started saying, have you ever had this and this and all these different things when you're growing up? And I'm like, to me, it was almost like going to a palm reader who had this freakish insight into your life. Like if he had said, and was your dad's middle name Joe or something, you'd be like, holy cow, how did you know this? And he's like, because you are a bog standard candidate. So I just figured, okay, fine. I have this. There's not much I can do about it. Usually it was just a source of people making jokes about you or saying stuff about you in public. Once or twice, I think it saved my life, because I'd sometimes catch the L train in Chicago home late at night, and instead of me getting mugged, other people get mugged because they think like that guy's something wrong with him. So, you know, it's a good defense mechanism, the fella twitching over in the corner acting weird. And anyone who knows me or who's ever seen me knows that I do all these faces and tics. And so that's what it is. Thankfully, what I don't have, because I actually do think it's funny, which is probably wrong, because like I think if someone has the same as you, you're meant to default into massive empathy for them. But I actually do think the screaming curse words one is kind of funny. That's the only thing about Tourette's a lot of people know, though, because you had the guy from the BAFTA Awards, you had like Pete from Big Brother, and it's this thing called coprolalia where you scream what is effectively, just think about it, instead of obscenities, more about whatever is inappropriate. So like if you went to go to someone's kid's christening, you might start shouting Satan in the church. If you met someone for the first time and it was their parents and she was your girlfriend, you might tell them, you know, I did such and such to your daughter. That would be so wrong.
Is it intrusive thoughts verbalized?
So what it is it's because I don't actually have that, I've never looked into it too deeply, but I do know, and because I met one or two people who have it, that basically they feel the way towards twitches, but for them it's like a word. So if you say to me, Carl, don't twitch, like if I actually even say that to myself, I'm going to start going up the scales. And
so it's more of a compulsion than
like
an obsession.
I can't stop it.
Yeah, it's compulsive.
And the tics migrate, and sometimes they're hitting you one way, sometimes they hit you on another. I used to have one where I wanted to like look right back over my shoulder, which, because I drive motorcycles, was just a really bad one, because it's just going to fucking hit a wall one day or something. But, you know, by and large, it doesn't affect your life. It doesn't cut years off your life, but you do have a lot of these other emotional issues that go with it. OCD style thoughts quite often. Sometimes I'd be quite obsessive about things. Again, I try to use that as a superpower. So I use it to try and practice music, to try and work on something, to focus on something. So I don't see it as being all bad. I'd really prefer not to have it. And the things that you were talking about, thoughts, like I just have these five steps and I say, this is just a thought.
Yeah.
Thoughts are not real. Mm. Actions are real. Mm. Everybody has crazy shit thoughts. Now, whether they do or not, that's what I tell myself.
Yeah.
And the fifth step of trying to take this thought and compartmentalize it is, this thought will go away, just like every other thought I've had in my life.
Yeah.
And I'll go through those five steps again and again. And I actually taught that five-step rule to one of my kids who, there's a genetic component to this, and thankfully he doesn't have twitches, but he has other things that affect him. And so I teach him those five steps. Mm. I'm always saying, he's like, Dad, what about blah? Like, do your five steps. Like, get into the habit of letting it go down that conveyor belt so you can deal with it, and then it doesn't become a thing anymore. So yeah, the screaming curse words, by the way, so it's called coprolalia, and basically it's not really about saying curse words. It's about whatever is wrong, which is why the other night at the BAFTAs, I can see why that guy started dropping N-bombs. It's like, what's the worst thing I could do right now? I mean, in a sense, the BAFTAs, and like I said, like I'm on his side because I'm a fellow traveler on the Tourette's wagon. But like putting a guy who screams shit right up next to the microphones, was that a wise choice? Like a part of me thinks the BBC would have been kind of happy with it, because they could be like, yeah, we did the right thing. We're like diversity, equity, inclusion. We have the disabled guy up the front screaming curse words. Yeah. You know, I wonder if that's part of why he was up the front. But if you have someone who you know does that, you know, I think the decent thing would be like, we're going to sit you in an exit. Because it's not like he's a spanner. It's not like he doesn't know what he's doing. You do know, but like, God, if you've got to escape, it's like, don't make him walk by the whole place. You know, give him an out.
Okay.
Give him something to offer relief.
All right. Well, you started it off then, Eka.
Yeah.
So then roll us back a little bit, Larissa. What happened?
The BAFTA.
Yeah.
So
what is this incident?
Yeah. So there's this movie out called I Swear. And Carl, actually, I was wondering, had you seen it yet? Maybe you haven't got to see it yet. But the actor is called John Davidson. And it's about his life with, as it's coprolalia, isn't that right?
Coprolalia, yeah. It actually comes from copro is usually the word
a copy of
feces.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So that's why coprophage, like animals that eat poo.
Oh, interesting.
Rabbits,
okay.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
So anyway, it's about his life. It's apparently amazing, and it was being lauded, and it won at the BAFTAs, I believe, or he won the actor over lots of other people. But when a couple of black actors were on stage, and I think their names are Michael B. Jordan and Del Rey Lindo, but I'm not great on films, so I'm not actually sure.
Michael B. Jordan would be a massive movie star, the star of Creed.
Sinners and stuff, was he?
Okay. Well, I'm glad
one of the biggest movie stars in the world now.
I have a big gap in my knowledge when it comes to film. There's loads of films I haven't seen and lots of actors I haven't seen. But anyway, these two were up on stage, and before that, he was shouting boring and bullshit, which probably was more apt. And then
that's kind of fun. Like, yeah, you can see why there's some entertainment in that as well. What might be good crack, you know? Like,
yeah,
like that guy Pete on Big Brothers. Does anyone remember that series of Big Brothers where he was constantly shouting like, wankers, wankers, and he'd be doing these great, and he was a great whistler for some reason. He could do these wonderful tunes, but like, it was like savage entertainment.
I only remembered him when you mentioned him, but
it's like non-stop. from the outside,
kind of a
in.
Punk. You kind of look like a punk.
Yeah, yeah. Adamant.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, and you know, I can see like how, if he didn't win, you'd be like, this show has to be rigged.
Yeah.
Because there's something about that just, it's endearing with just how manic it is.
Yeah.
You know, and so like you've got this guy up the front, but then you put the black guys on and it's like, what's the worst thing I could do here?
Yeah.
And that's the thing that will start to, like, just, oh my God. It's like if you tell me not to twitch, I start to get this feeling almost like pressure building in a tube or something. And eventually I can't. I even cover my face and just do it behind my hands if I have to.
Mm.
But yeah,
you can't. There's no stopping it.
Mm.
So he had this opportunity of his lifetime, when you think about it. And then, of course, the two black men on stage, and the, what's the worst thing and what's the worst word you can say in common usage at the moment. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's what he's shouting. My issue is with it is that, you know, surely if we're all lauding this film and understanding the disability and the dark side of the disability, or the difficult side of the disability, is that you just go, okay, there's no intent caused here. The impact is maybe tough on the lads up on stage, but there's no intent, so we move on, and that's what disability is. But no, it turned out to be a real controversy in that Jamie Foxx got online and said, oh, he meant to say that, which is literally probably the worst thing you could say about something like this, because that just feeds into all the stereotypes of it.
But that,
one of the judges actually stepped down and said, oh, you know, black people aren't safe anymore on stage and all this kind of stuff, which is both terribly patronizing to black people.
That's a radicalized victimhood, though. Say that, oh, the use of that word, I have to be offended and it has to be the worst thing that ever happened. Like, you look at some rap music awards, I guarantee you'd hear that word a lot. Mm. No one would say a word.
Mm. Yeah.
Because N-word, like, I don't like saying it because I actually think it's an offensive term.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think anyone should say it. And I certainly don't think black people should be able to say it. Like, oh, well, because we have that skin color, like, we're cool. Like, we can just blast that into our music, blast it into our sentences, and it's all okay. But the second you say it, it's somehow this massive offense. When, like, you could have been living in Timbuktu when there was slavery. Like, you could have been anything. There's no way to say that you were somehow some institutionalized benefit of slavery, great life. You could be the poorest white trash. Way poorer, certainly, than any of the people who are on the stage who are all millionaires, or any people in the audience who are all millionaires or all at the peak of society. This whole thing about the way that works, it's just nonsensical, but it's radicalized victimhood, radicalized insinuation of racism. Like, a guy who screams curse words, it's like taking him to church, and if he screams Satan to say, that's the evidence that I have that he's obsessed by the, or possessed by the devil, you have to do a, what's the thing where you get the demon?
Oh, the exorcism.
Exorcism, yeah. You know, it, like, that's evidence of it. Like, but it's effectively a social witch trial.
Absolutely. So, was there a movement out there, or a feeling out there, or that this, among anybody, that this guy had committed a racist offence?
No, because everybody had to know about his scenario, except it seems Jamie Foxx, in fairness, who actually said he meant to say that.
Okay, you know, was Jamie Foxx then not informed that this person suffers from a condition called Tourette's?
Well, I'm sure that he was, because he was there for the whole thing. But this instinct to
give him the benefit of the doubt, maybe he actually just doesn't know, and maybe he's just a bit thick.
I know. You know, well,
like, no, it's possible. Maybe he's like, or maybe he heard Tourette's and he thinks, oh, that's the thing where people scream stuff, but only scream stuff they mean. Being as generous to Jamie Foxx or whatever about him, good actor, but you know, he can also be stupid. People can, anyone can.
But I mean, you know?
And ill-informed.
Yeah,
but to think that people actually underneath it all really mean to say these things is a complete misunderstanding of the condition, because the whole thing is that it's stuff that is abhorrent and obnoxious, and the worse it can be, the better. So for me, like, it'd be like somebody saying to me, oh, you know the way you were imagining killing Mario there with the... There's no weapons in here I can use to kill you with, Mario, but with the
mic,
killing him with the mic
stand. All the legs
stand,
closed. Good way.
You really meant that, though, didn't you? And you're like, no, this is the whole reason why these conditions can be tormenting, is because people don't understand them. I mean, like, everyone can't understand everything all the time. But for me, I think what it really showed was it was sort of the final boss battle of victimhood cultures coming together. You know, I mean, who's going to win? You know, is it
black people
racism,
or disability?
Or is it disability?
Yeah. And it's like the cripple fight in South Park. It's like, you know, Timmy versus the other fella. And it's so inappropriate to pit these two people against each other. But you are literally taking, you know, people who've had historic wrongs, or maybe they didn't. You know, there's loads of black people in the world who were never enslaved. And then you've got, you know, a guy who clearly is there for his disability, doing what his disability does
in good faith,
and you've now turned them into some kind of celebrity war.
It was a perverse sort of celebrity death match. Yeah. I mean, the only thing that was missing was, I suppose, that the winner of this goes on to play the guy who has black Tourette's.
Yes. Oh, I want to get black lesbian Tourette's or with Jewishism.
Yeah. But this is always the inevitable endpoint of this.
You are a sick boy, Mario. You know, the way you just come up with that, boom, boom, boom. There's something wrong with you. I like it, but like...
Yeah, we're fine. It's Mario who's got something wrong with him.
It's been hiding in plain sight for years, guys. I've been sort of passing myself off as this gentle satirist for years. But actually, it's Satan! Larissa, I thought when you said you were exorcised about this that you were saying you were going to exorcise me. So, but because Satan is within me.
He actually needs the demons for the job.
So basically, these two monoliths of culture.
The Untouchable Shields.
The Untouchable Shields met against each other.
Yeah.
And what can we say about that? Can I ask who won?
I think that it was maybe going on one direction for a while, and then when the tide was turning, it went the other direction. So here's the thing. I mean, disability and neurodiversity lately is the one that we can almost all of us can come in under. So that's been the almost trendy one in the last while to be cheering for. You know, everybody's neurodiverse. You can't say anything to them because they may have something XYZ. So it was really hard one, I'd say, for the people who enjoyed this sort of victimhood identity battle. They must have been like, oh, which side am I on here? For me, like, I mean, it's just as simple as this. That's complete hypocrisy. You can never, there's no way that you can say this person over that person. There's no picking sides. Mm. I think it's terrible that black people...
I'm going to come around.
I also think it's terrible he has
two things are right at the same time.
I actually think disability won fair and square, and I'll tell you why, though. So you take the two things that were at odds. On one is a person's race or skin color, and you cannot control that and you can't change it. The other one is this guy's disability. He definitely cannot control it and he cannot change it. So you have these two unavoidable realities. And then you have this guy doing his thing and shouting racial obscenities. But then you have to bear in mind, the black people on the receiving end, or black people in general, can say, I choose to be offended by that, or not, because it is actually a choice. And the reason I say it's a choice, which might seem unusual, is that were it a black rapper getting up there doing a song who mentioned the N-word 14 times and talked about maybe shooting some hypothetical other rapper and calling him the N-word, none of this offense would have occurred. But they chose to internalize something from a disabled person, which again is an unavoidable reality of his disability, and interpret it in that way. And not only that, but to do so while they are at the peak of all society, looking at a guy who clearly in all the room probably doesn't belong there. Like, this is the only film he's ever going to make, unless he has a feature role in something where he's screaming curse words, like, which is going to be a niche role on a good day. So like,
or Scarface too.
You're killing me. But you get what I'm saying. Like when you actually do all the logic trees down, it's like, you got to be bigger than that. Like, Let's for a start just realize the N-word it's a word. Like I said, I don't like it because I think it's offensive, but it can only cut so deep. It can only do so much damage. And in particular, when you're at the elite of the elite and you choose to internalize it that way from a guy who clearly is like, has, I don't want to call it like whatever, like a neurodiversity. I mean, it's a pretty mental thing. Disability won all the way.
Just pick up on something.
I wonder. I was thought you meant a lot more online in the online battle. Did it win? But
yeah.
But the main thing for me, it just showed was, I think it just revealed a lot of people's ignorance. Secondly, the hypocrisy of these kind of battles, because it's like, oh yes, we're all for disability. We're all for disability. Until it comes up against something and we've no way of explaining that. But the other thing is, he has it every day. Like, he's dealing with this every single day of his life.
Correct.
This was just one instant, a small amount of time. So I think I just feel like there was massive...
But black folks would argue they're black every day of their lives, and that comes with various other downsides. But I would say that the people who live with those downsides are certainly not the people on the stage who choose to be offended, or the likes of Jamie Foxx, who is a, you know, multi-millionaire. Like, I think there has to come a point where you say all that stuff. Like, those are the shackles of your past that you've risen beyond and no one really cares about anymore. It'd be like Irish people still crapping on about how we're downtrodden today because of the famine back then. Like, at some point, you've got to move on. And when you're the top of the top, I think you just delegitimize yourself by holding these, you know, ghetto views that are, you know, pretty much unfounded most of the time.
Just something you said there, Carl. I'll tell you what's worse than the N-word. Sometimes you feel that there's, you know, you're being told that there is nothing worse than the N-word. It is the ultimate thing. I'll tell you what's worse than the N-word. The perpetuation of hundreds of years of social injustice and poverty and the grinding poverty that the actual class are subjected to.
Yeah.
That's way worse than any word.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But of course...
Yeah, no, the word is more offensive than what's actually happening.
Yeah.
No, that's what I'm saying. This whole thing is just riven. It's just riven with hypocrisy. And, you know, I think like either we actually stand up for minorities and people who are vulnerable, or we don't. Like, you can't just pick and choose whenever it comes up against something that you think, oh, that's more important. Like, it's not, you can't have, you know, victimhood priorities.
Again, but what it also brought, this is a slight tangent, but what it also brought to light again was the almost hilarious ineptitude of the BBC and the hapless nature of the organisation in walking into gaffes every single second week.
Yeah. I wonder though, did they do it on purpose in that they thought, you know, we can't be seen to sideline this guy, even though he possibly needed to be, in the way you were explaining, Carl. And maybe we can't censor him either.
I would just say, I'm not saying that if you put him in the back of the room, I'm not, like, maybe that was mean. I'm just saying that as someone that I know I can't control it, that, like, I love when I'm doing TV shows, for instance. Like, I don't do too much of it anymore, but I used to be on, say, different shows, like news shows and things, and there's cameras on you. I used to love when they would just let me talk, but maybe, like, cut to other people. Because I know when I'm on there and I get going, like, I'm twitching and there's just no way to stop it. Because if I focus on not twitching, it's like you trying to write a sentence and listen to a conversation, and the sentence and the conversation are about two different things.
Yeah, but
I have to do it.
Your twitching is not annoying for anybody.
It is to me.
Except yourself.
Yeah, no, well, okay, well, so I'm my greatest enemy, and I have that in common with most people. Your biggest enemy is quite often you.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that, like, it is... something that I'm saying, like, I'm going to look back at this and you're going to look like the exact, you know, exactly what you don't want to look like. And, you know, the online comments don't help either. And, like, it's not that, like, oh, you know, it gets to me too much, but it's still nonstop, you know, comments, sayings, blah, listen to that guy, look at him, you know.
I'm going to give Carl a big compliment now. Just stand by for compliment. I think Carl's Tourette's and tics are helped by the fact he's so good looking.
Love that.
And no, but seriously, do you know what I mean? Like, if Carl wasn't as handsome as he is, I think people would be like, oh, look at your man, doing this and doing
that. Being good looking is one of the biggest advantages you can have in life of any colour. And that's actually a proven thing, whether you're black, white or otherwise. Good looks is actually an advantage that is way beyond. Like, you can be literally from the worst ghetto in Mumbai, and if you're gorgeous, you'll rise up to, like, it's the odds of it are just amazing.
In fairness, it is
your odds of getting lighter prison sentences, your odds of getting raises. Like, I actually wrote an article when I used to write for The Sun that said, let's not talk about racial inequality, let's talk about looks inequality, because that's actually where the true piece of it is.
I have a question though, actually. This is one part of the two things where they're different. I think exposure therapy is one of the things that you get for OCD. So actually the little 5-step program that you were saying you tell your children is nearly what they tell you in cognitive behavioral therapy, which is what you get for OCD. But one of the therapies is exposure therapy. So the more that you're exposed to situations, say for example, if you're afraid you're going to murder someone, the more you're exposed to situations, like the more you go out in your car and don't run someone over, the more you cook in your kitchen with big blades. I still don't have blades around my kitchen. I haven't been able to move forward.
It's the alcoholic who covers his bedroom wall in alcohol.
Yeah.
I had a friend called Tom, and he was an absolutely chronic alcoholic.
Oh, I see what you mean.
And we went to visit him in Austria once, and we flipped a coin in Munich, and we said, heads for Austria, tails for Berlin. And it came up on heads. And so we drove under the Brenner Pass and everything and out to Austria. And we met Tom, my uncle, who worked for the United Nations in a very kind of normal job, actually in the drugs area, but a normal job within the drugs area. But he had always been a chronic alcoholic. And I went to his house and he went, Mario, so good to see you. Come on in. Oh, you've brought your friends, your young 21-year-old friends. Great. Come on in. Have a look around. And it was wall to wall, like every bit of the wall was taken up with alcohol.
Wow.
I went, Tom, interesting. He went, oh yes, that, yes, yeah. Well,
so he was doing exposure therapy to the extreme.
Exposure therapy, wow. Basically.
But
I know that
if I
can avoid touching this.
Yeah. You're untouchable, really. I mean, that's cool. He's like total control freak almost in a way. But like, I remember having to go through that in the beginning. I remember going, I can never do this. Like, I had to sleep with knives under my bed and all this stuff, under my pillow. They actually do this quite crazy stuff. I remember saying to the therapist, what happens though if I just go mad? and like kill everybody. And then they'll be like, oh, well, you know, we've told her to sleep with knives under her bed. And she was like, but you're not going to. That's the whole point of what you have. And I said, but imagine I did, because that's all I ever did. And she said, well, then you move into a different category of patient. And I thought, oh,
that's reassuring.
Well, actually, but you know what? It kind of is weird.
I come from thinking
actually,
I'm crazy.
One of the things I found helped me as well was thinking out things to the absolute worst degree and then going, right, I've thought the worst thing now. It's happened. I can move on from it.
The exposure for Tourette's is like when you wake up. I don't have a way to do that unless I unalive myself. Well, there are things that turn it off like when I play music. I don't know if you, yeah. Actually, Larissa came to see me play a show there the other week.
Amazing.
When I'm playing music, it stops. Or when I play video games.
I understand.
So I do actually...
That reminds me of the stammer, your man Gareth Gates. A lot of stammerers stop stammering when they sing.
And it's... I'm not sure why that is. I never actually looked into it, but I do know my Twitch is turned off.
I think it's because a different neural system is engaged when you're doing this. It obviously is. I mean, without me by myself being an expert. But one thing that this week has taught me is that the world has a difficulty and needs to be taught a little bit more with about retaining two different thoughts in your head at the same time, right? So like you could say, right, we need to, you know, you can be not against racism, of course.
Yeah.
But of course you need to protect the guy who had the Tourette syndrome.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people would believe as well that you can see the deposing of an Ayatollah in a repressive regime being positive, but not necessarily the means or the person that was there to do it.
Yeah, totally.
I wanted to see if either of you watched this sketch.
On Saturday Night Live, yeah.
Saturday Night Live did a sketch on this, and it's been it's been interesting how it's gone down. And I haven't said anything to you about this sketch. I would just like to see if there's anything you could say about it. So this is the beginning of the sketch, so it might make sense or might not. This guy is playing Mel Gibson, and he's looking into camera.
Hi, I'm Mel Gibson. And as I probably should have pointed out decades ago, I too suffer from Tourette's, which explains a lot of the things I've said or yelled through the years. Am I proud of what I said? No. But I am very proud for you to know it was because of Tourette's. Unfortunately, I'm not alone.
Hi, I'm OG Real Housewife of New York, Jill Zarin. You might have seen the video I posted this week where I said Bad Bunny did the worst halftime show in history. And why was it in Spanish? And where were all the white people? But what you didn't know is that I suffer from severe, long-winded, monologue-style Tourette's, a condition that affects 9 out of 10 people on Long Island.
Hi, cuties. I'm Armie Hammer. But not many people know this, but one of the most common side effects of Tourette's is cannibalism.
And on it goes, all these different celebrities saying this. But a few people, this is just my own interpretation, but a few people, like people who, fairly eminent people posted online going, this is not only not funny, it is disgusting and it is trivializing Tourette's.
Oh.
Me, when I watched the sketch, I thought what it was satirizing the ability of celebrities who have been in trouble try and find a bandwagon to jump on to excuse them for their transgressions.
Yeah.
That's what I think it is.
Oh, that's what I mean. For me, what it is as well is that there's a second layer to it, which is the kind of satirizing, the broadening out of and the labeling of everything to become some form of a condition that you could literally have anything that you can put a name on it, and then you can use that as a shield.
Yes.
So I think it's
a shield for misdemeanors.
Yeah, or for anything, in fact. And so, like, actually, when you broaden things out to that degree, I think then what you do get though is just complete ignorance about real illnesses or real conditions, which is why probably we didn't. But some people don't understand Tourette's.
But some of the commentary was, and I mean, some people, I won't mention their names, people with very, very mainstream commentators.
Okay, in Ireland abroad?
UK, okay. America, were saying, look at this and shame it, because this sketch is basically equivocating Tourette's with, let's say, racism.
I think that's a misunderstanding, isn't it?
And
maybe a
humor.
Look, I watched that clip and I did actually laugh at a few parts of it. Maybe, you know, I'm just at a point in my life where I can find Tourette's funny too. Maybe you're not meant to laugh at it if you also have it. I think objectively it's actually a funny clip.
I didn't see that. This is the
but point. There are parts of it, by the way, that I would say are basically, you know, the kind of the left woke ensuring that it gets scoring points in on certain people. Yeah. They had to go with J.K. Rowling to say, oh, and this is why I have, you know, trans Tourette's in order to blah, blah, blah. There was another guy in the middle who was like, and so this is why I'm allowed to say things that are completely socially inappropriate because I'm a race. And I was like, okay, so you have to get the points going in. Why can't you just be funny like you were at the start?
Yeah.
They had a bit where Bill Cosby was, and then I was like, my God, you're flying close to the sun on that one.
Sure.
And it was pretty mental. And like, but I'm able to laugh. That clip made me laugh at some parts, and at other parts be like, you're so obvious.
Exactly.
Like, why do you do that?
Exactly. But from a person who writes sketches, I was going, you know, the closest thing to the bone, obviously, if you even want to say that, is the Bill Cosby thing, because it's so raw and horrible. But again, in my comic mind, I was going, exactly, perfect. We need Bill Cosby and his ilk would use anything they could to try and get off.
Yeah, but that's what you get when you create a system whereby if you say you have something, you get off everything.
Right, that's what they're saying.
I mean, for me, that was what I got.
The humour was it.
Yeah, that's what I got.
It was misinterpreted by some people.
Yeah, some people don't like.
I'll be honest with you, there's another part of humour where if somebody's not offended, you probably aren't doing the job right. Like there's good clean humor, don't get me wrong, and there's a whole area of that I think you do a pretty good job in. But if you want to be like the raw edge humor, someone's always going to be offended. Is Frankie Boyle funny? I would say objectively, yeah, he is. Has he said some crazy stuff that like is definitely going to upset some people? I utterly guarantee it. Jimmy Carr, comic genius. Does he say stuff that offends people? 100%. Like,
I'll just see the flip side to that. There is a skill in not doing that.
Oh yeah, no, it's a separate talent. Like, you remember that guy?
This is what I have to spend my whole life doing.
I know. Well, that's what I'm
saying. You're 15 in the morning. Do you slyly hint at something without saying it?
Yeah.
No. But still, some people understand what you're kind of getting at.
I have the same issue, Mario.
Remember the guy who used to wear the red hat? And he's like just like that, and he used to do the magic tricks and make them go wrong, and then he died on stage, and people thought it was
Tommy Cooper.
Tommy Cooper. Like genius in that.
Yeah.
And humor throughout the 50s and 60s, it was genius levels of clean humor because dirtbag humor was really only in the comedy clubs. But
when people had to subvert the Hays Code in films, for example, it made them much smarter.
Oh yeah.
In creating.
What does that mean?
What?
What's the Hays Code?
The Hays Code was a censoring code throughout Hollywood for many, many years, which meant you couldn't do certain things in film. Like, for example, no kissing with tongues, no certain thing.
Okay.
No saying of certain things. Like they used to have,
you probably could say the N-word straight,
They had a fella at film once about a fella who was gay, right?
Right.
In the 30s, and they had to rename the entire film going, "Why didn't he ever marry?" Starring Joel, la la la. He never wanted to marry.
Neil Shea Poster, as they say.
Yeah, but it was basically everybody who went to see it knew what we were talking about, but you couldn't say it.
Yeah, okay, so that was the Hays Code. That's if you've learned something today. I don't know about that.
So, yeah, I mean, I remember one of my
favorite... new Hays Code now, obviously.
One of my favorite skits in comedy is called Who's On First?
Yeah,
I don't know if you ever
Abbott and Costello.
Yeah.
Who's on first?
And he's talking about a baseball team and he's saying, who's on first? And he's like, okay, who's on first? He's like, that's right. And then he's on. And if you watch it, it's like, it's just genius.
It is genius. It's one of the most, it's a seminal comedy sketch.
Yeah. But the point I'd be making is there was an era where that was at the peak. And that talent is a talent. It's a recognizable one. You've got it. A lot of people don't. Like, you probably couldn't put Jimmy Carr on an early morning show. And then there's like the stuff that's the edgier stuff. And I think that's where comedy is at the very edge of what it's doing, where it's at the edge of what's acceptable.
Yeah.
And you might be able to do that live, but you can't do it on radio.
No.
You probably can't do it on a podcast on this particular, distribution.
Mm.
But that's the thing, is that like, I do believe if you're at the edge of inventiveness, you probably can't do it in a clean manner, because there were so many years of that being done so well that really what you can just do is very good.
In the live context, I love messing with people's preconceptions of what they think might be controversial or not by just messing with it. The other day I was talking, the other night I was doing a show and I was just, I was in search of a word. And I was describing how, I was trying to describe how Irish rugby supporters in Ireland go from a state of utter ecstasy in one moment to utter devastation and catastrophization in the next moment.
Yeah.
In the space of 1 week.
Yeah, yeah.
We're the best team in the world. We're the uselessest team in the world, right? And I described it, I said there was this thing was bipolar. And I could hear the audience going, ooh.
Really?
Yeah. And the only reason was I used the word bipolar, which to them triggered something in them.
That's amazing.
In other words, hot topic, don't mention it.
But then that's a word that
was talking about two poles.
So that's now, but that's now taboo, obviously.
You even use the word. It isn't taboo. I'm saying, no, that's wrong for Larissa.
But is it not for them?
They think it is.
They think it is. That's what I mean.
Yeah, until you have to tell them, No.
Yeah, it's not. It's so actually a word.
Stephen Fry discussed, like, Stephen Fry has a very interesting thing on YouTube where he talks about the word rape.
Mm.
And rape, he says, is slowly becoming an unusable word.
Oh, right. Again.
No. The word rape is becoming an unusable word, almost a taboo word.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas the word rape has multi different uses.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? To rape the land and all this sort of stuff. And it has always had multiple uses. But because it's been pigeonholed into one...
But that's actually why in America they have a thing called canola oil that doesn't exist. There is no thing called a canola plant.
Yeah.
There's the rapeseed plant.
Yes.
And it's called rape oil.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yes.
But the Americans will not call it that.
Yes.
So they invented a new name for it called canola oil.
Yes.
So the Nirvana wouldn't get released in the
Like, certainly, like in gamer world, although I haven't actually heard it in a while now that you mention it, you'd be like, oh yeah, in that last game we got raped. And that's just saying that you got like... really, you know, got devastatingly lost whatever you were doing.
I have a problem with that one.
Yeah.
I would have a problem with that one because I think what you're doing by using that word there is you're directly conjuring the image of sexual violence.
Yeah.
And I think that
it's in both
a male on female or a female on female, or particularly a male on male in a
it would be male. Most gamers are guys, so yeah.
But you're talking more like rape the land or something like
that. That word is one of the least. I mean, that word is a huge word in the English language.
Yeah,
which should not be owned by people who think it's just about sexual
but essentially what you're saying there, Mario, no, I wasn't saying it's a taboo word. I was saying that people are beginning to start applying this must be a taboo word. They're almost afraid of certain language. If they're afraid of the word bipolar,
you can even be afraid of how it sounds. Like, you will never hear people use a certain word for a small light chuckle that rhymes with bigger.
So that is his Tourette's. I'm blaming now.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just saying. No,
that's exposure. That's beautiful. Exposure.
That's my exposure therapy. Yeah. No, but you know, and someday we might not be able to talk about a fruit called a grape because it has
Carol's weird crosswords.
No, I'm just saying. Yeah, no, it's right.
Cryptic.
Yeah. No, but you can't. You know, like.
What else can we not say? Actually, in recent years, there are certain things that come up that you're like, oh, you're not allowed to say that now.
That's our next podcast, guys.
Not sure, yeah.
Larissa, do you have anything to finish on this? Did you get it all off your chest there?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I just want to say to people like that, there, like, obviously, you go in, you get your diagnosis for this kind of thing when it's causing you extreme distress. And once someone tells you, because I didn't know what it was, once someone tells you, ah, this is a thing that people get, it's a really severe form of anxiety. Lots of people have it. You know, it's not normal to have it, but it's normal in a therapy setting to have it, or in a psychology or neurology setting to have it. So I think, just saying to people, not want to sound like Brezzy now, as much as I love Brezzy, but I'm just saying like that if you felt that you had it or it was tormenting you, thoughts like that, like you can get the diagnosis. Some people work well with medication. I needed it at the start. I didn't take it after that. I wouldn't be keen on it myself. I prefer to go down the therapy road, but you can get all these. Basically, it can be controlled and you can deal with it. And I think Carl's 5-step program for intrusive thoughts is probably the most effective thing you could do.
And have you just been left in a situation with this incident with John Davidson, the star of the movie, I swear, where you just threw your eyes to heaven? Is that what?
No, I thought that the reason why it's so frustrating having a condition like this is that people fundamentally misunderstand it, and the whole basis of it is that you don't mean these things. You are thinking the most obnoxious thing or most abhorrent thing. It's not what you internally feel, and I think that for me, what upset me is too strong a word, but what exercised me about it was that this idea was that, oh, he somehow internally meant what he said. The whole point of, I think, Tourette's and OCD is that you don't. You don't mean what you're saying. You're just saying something that's obnoxious.
I think we have to get to a point where we talk about, you know, getting back to the idea of sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. There is a certain level of fortitude that I think people need to have. And I think we've moved away from that.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And, you know, just my part in Gambit would be that, like, if there's someone out there listening to this and you're, like, studying Tourette's and you find something interesting, you can reach out to me, or if you happen to have a cure, I'll take it. But if someone that you know or love like does things like tics or twitching and things like that, it might be Tourette's. It could also just be a tic disorder, which is cool. But if it is, just understand, like, that people might make jokes about you, but it's not going to hold you back. Like, you can actually own your future. So I just tell people if you are, there's always a lot worse thing than words and language.
And the other thing that I would say is, you say, have a bit of fortitude, sticks and stones will break my bones. But I think also people should extend each other the benefit of good faith and goodwill. The idea that if somebody, you hear something or you give something, don't cry wolf before you, you know, investigate. One, was it really meant malevolently or malicious?
Yeah.
And two, check it out.
Yeah.
Was it real?
Yeah, it's intent over impact or impact over intent.
If you're going to let your emotions go to a place where you feel you have to talk about this, then at least let your logical mind go to a place where you find out about it.
Yeah.
You
know, that's what we try to do in this little episode. So, Larissa, thank you for being the producer of this podcast.
Thanks for having us on, two headbangers.
Yeah, in our new studios. Yeah.
And it is fantasy, too.
Larissa OCD and Carl Tourette's Dieter.
Fuck off.
You have to get one in there.
Yeah, you have to finish with the big F off.
I was actually wondering, would he make it through the episode?
You know what I didn't like about that?
Couldn't help it.
It was just such light humor. for a guy with Tourette's, the best you could do is
I should have gone with the C-bomb.
Oh yeah, the C-bomb. I should have been, but of course, you know, he's only
I'm not sure what you can and can't do. Like I'm still, when I'm in this building, C-bomb. I'm in radio mode, so I just I don't know how far you can go on a podcast.
Okay, so that's Brendan O'Connor saying goodbye to all of you now, one of my easiest impressions, so good luck.
We all think the same things.
That's a great one.
And my thanks to Carl and Larissa for calling into the Mario Rosenstock podcast, joining me and having a great chat about that issue. If you want to contact me, of course, it's mariorosenstock@gmail.com about anything that's on your mind at all. And if you can, tell one other person, that's all about this podcast. See you same time next week.